සමන්ත චක්කවාලේසු අත්‍රා ගච්ඡන්තු දේවතා සද්ධම්මං මුනි රාජස්ස සුනන්තු සග්ග මොක්ඛදං ධම්ම ශ්‍රවණ කාලෝ අයම් භදන්තා ධම්ම ශ්‍රවණ කාලෝ අයං භදන්තා ධම්ම ශ්‍රවණ කාලෝ අයං භදන්තා නමෝ තස්ස භගවතු අරහතෝ සම්මා සම්බුද්දස්ස නමෝ තස්ස භගවතු අරහතෝ සම්මා සම්බුද්දස්ස නමෝ තස්ස භගවතු අරහතෝ සම්මා සම්බුද්දස්ස අප්පිච්ඡසායං ධම්මෝ නායං ධම්මෝ දුප්පඤ්ඤස්ස සන්තුත්ථසායං ධම්මෝ නායං ධම්මෝ අසන්තුත්ථස්ස තස්ස පවිවිත්තස්සායං ධම්මෝ නායං ධම්මෝ දුප්පඤ්ඤස්ස සමාහිතස්සායං ධම්මෝ නායං ධම්මෝ අසමාහිතස්ස පඤ්ඤාවන්තස්සායං ධම්මෝ නායං ධම්මෝ දුප්පඤ්ඤස්ස පඤ්ඤස්ස ආරද්ධ විරියස්සායං ධම්මෝ නායං ධම්මෝ කුසීතස්ස උපද්දිත සතිස්සායං ධම්මෝ නායං ධම්මෝ මුට්ඨසතිස්ස නිප්පපංචාරාමස්සායං ධම්මෝ පපංච රතිනෝ නායං ධම්මෝ පපංචාරාමස්ස පපංච රතිනෝති Good evening everybody. I am very happy to come to this beautiful temple and see so many of you interested in listening to Dhamma assembled here. Tonight I am supposed to talk on the joy and happiness gained from the practice of Dhamma. I thought of giving them this Dhamma talk for short time and probably spend few more minutes answering questions if you have any. The Pali passages I recited at the beginning, first was invitation to all the devas to come and listen to Dhamma. Friends, it is very important for us to invite devas to come and listen to Dhamma. In this modern technological society, we are so mechanical and we have ignored devas and chased them out from our temples, from our homes, from our countries. They are living in outer galaxies. So it is time for us to invite them to come back. We have been living in a society where Dhamma practice has become very difficult. So we need these deities to come, listen to Dhamma, help us, help others to practice Dhamma, to gain joy and happiness from learning, practicing Dhamma. So we thought of inviting all the deities to come and listen to Dhamma. And then I said, this is the time to listen to Dhamma. Dhamma savana kalo ayang bhadanta. Bhadanta means dear friends. This is the time to listen to Dhamma. The world, as we all know, is full of enormous amount of problems because people are deviated, separated from the Dhamma. They have neglected Dhamma and therefore they get so closely involved, deeply involved in material things, and therefore people are not very happy. If you practice Dhamma, live in accordance with the Dhamma, you will be definitely happy. I say this not for the sake of saying, not as a rhetoric, but this is true, that we practice Dhamma, we will live peacefully and happily. I will elaborate this statement later on in this short discourse. And then traditionally when we give a Dhamma talk, we pay respect to the Buddha, homage to the blissful one, the worthy one, the fully enlightened one. We recited three times and then we recited the topic in Pali. This is a very traditional way of giving Dhamma talks, particularly in Sri Lanka. I selected this passage to give this talk from Anguttara Nikaya, 7, 8 chapter. As you know, Anguttara Nikaya is the collection of discourses arranged in accordance with numbers. They are translated into English as numerical discourses. That means those discourses dealing with one is in chapter number one. The discourses dealing with two are in chapter number two. The discourses dealing with number three are in chapter 3. Like that, there are 11 chapters dealing with 11 things. So this particular discourse you find in the chapter dealing with 8 numbers. One day, Venerable Anuruddha was in a forest meditating, and when he was meditating, just like when you all and we all meditate, that is the time all kind of thoughts keep coming to our mind. Not only you and I, but even Venerable Anuruddha, who later attained full enlightenment with supernatural powers. Remember when the Buddha was going to pass away, he attained the jhanas 1, 2, 3, 4 and immaterial jhanas, and every time he attained jhanas, other monks who were not enlightened thought that the Buddha passed away. Each time Venerable Anuruddha said, not yet. When he attained the neither perception nor non-perception, other monks say, now he passed away. Venerable Anuruddha said, not yet. When he attained the, came from the neither perception nor non-perception to number one jhana, other monks said that he passed away. Venerable Anuruddha said, not yet. Until Buddha really passed away, Venerable Anuruddha was watching the Buddha's mind, and he was the only one in that crowd of enlightened monks who was able to trace every step of the Buddha's passing away until he passed away. When he really passed away, he said, now he passed away. But when he was meditating, he had many thoughts. And these are not very trivial thoughts, but noble thoughts. And therefore they are called thoughts of eight thoughts of a noble one. Eight thoughts of a noble one. So Venerable Anuruddha came up with seven. Number one of them is, this Dhamma is for one who wants little, not for one who wants too much. It's a very beautiful thought. Because when you want too much, your mind is in chaos. It goes here and there, looking for this and that. It is called in Pali, porno bhavika, becoming again and again, going from object to object, looking for objects to please your senses, eyes, ears, nose, tongue, body and mind. That is the nature of wanting too much. When you want too much, you want to please your eyes, please your nose, tongue, ear, body and mind. So mind is not settled down. So long as the mind is not settled down, you cannot understand the Dhamma. So mind must settle down. And moreover, when the mind is looking for various new places, new grounds, then you become agitated, excited, and cannot gain concentration. Second thought that occurred to him, this Dhamma is for one who is contented, not one who is discontented. Contentment is becoming happy, glad with what you have, rather than becoming greedy. When we are not satisfied with what we have, then we become covetous. Covetousness is becoming greedy for things that belong to somebody else. Seeing something somebody has, we think, ah, this is nice, I wish I have this. Somebody has an expensive car, you might think, gee, this is a beautiful car, expensive car, I wish I have that. Somebody has a beautiful house, something, then you might think, gee, I like to have this. That kind of wish, desire is called covetousness. When we are not contented, we always become covetous. Such a person cannot understand Dhamma because mind is not settled down. And then the third thought he had was, this Dhamma is for one who likes solitude, not a one who likes company, society, being with people. I noticed it very clearly because I live in a forest for the last 20 years, and I realize how peaceful that place is, how quiet it is, how easy for me to contemplate on Dhamma, practice meditation, when we are in society with crowds of people. We always get involved in all kinds of talks, gossip, chatters, talking mostly nonsense and so forth. And that way we waste a lot of time, energy, and we will not be able to understand Dhamma because the mind is so preoccupied with various kind of unnecessary talks. Particularly gossip. The Pali word for gossip is sampappalapa. Sampappalapa. When you hear the word, you can guess the meaning. It is just blah, 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 blah. So Pali word is sampappalapa. And that's what we like, that's what we do, and that's what we enjoy. And so long as we are in that kind of conversations, we cannot understand Dhamma. So Venerable Anuruddha thought, this Dhamma can be understood by one who loves solitude. Solitude can be three types. They are called Kaya Viveka, Chitta Viveka and Upadhi Viveka. Kaya Viveka means separating physically from hustle, bustle, busy activities, separating from societies, from people, living alone under a tree, in a cave, in a forest, some quiet, solitary place. That is we call Kaya Viveka. Kaya means body, something physical. Viveka means solitude. Chitta Viveka is the second. That is liberating mind temporarily from hindrances. Hindrances are greed, hatred, restlessness and worry, sleepiness and drowsiness and doubts. These are called hindrances. Freeing the mind from these is called chitta viveka. We can liberate the mind from these five hindrances by attaining jhanas. When we attain jhanas, the mind temporarily becomes free from these hindrances. And that is a wonderful state, wonderful time, peaceful time, quiet time, where we can contemplate, practice, concentrate on Dhamma. And such a person will understand Dhamma. And the third type of solitude is called ideal solitude. Ideal solitude means without a second with you, without any second, you are the only one. That means so long as we have a greed, hatred and delusion in our mind, we have a companion. Greed is a companion, hatred is a companion, delusion is a companion. We may be separated from physical things. We also may be separated temporarily from hindrances, but still we will have in our mind these types of mental impurities. These mental impurities are called the second that lives with us. So long as they are there, we do not understand Dhamma properly. So this is the thought that Venerable Anuruddha has. Then he thought the fourth kind of thought was the thought that this Dhamma can be understood by one who gain mindfulness, who has mindfulness. This Dhamma cannot be understood by one who does not gain mindfulness. Why? When you are mindful, you are alert, you are very sharp, clear, and you see things happening exactly as they are happening. That is the function of mindfulness, job of mindfulness. When we are mindful, we experience things exactly as they are, without any distortion. In mindfulness practice, we become aware of things without perception, without concept. Sometimes in my writing, I use a term called preconceptual awareness. Preconceptual awareness. When you have concepts, ideas, words, labels, you will not see the truth. Concept, ideas, labels will block the truth. So you got to remove all these concepts, ideas, labels in order to see bare truth. So when we are mindful, we see the truth. So Venerable Anuruddha had this thought. He thought this Dhamma can be understood by one who does not use ideas, labels, concepts and see things with mindfulness. This is a big subject. Then the next thought he had was, this Dhamma can be understood by one who has concentration, not one who does not have concentration. That also is very true, friends. Even children, as we all have been children, as we all have gone through our education system, we cannot learn anything without paying attention, without gaining concentration. When you have good concentration, our understanding is very clear. And what we learn will stay in our mind. The Dhamma is particularly important, and we need the concentration to learn Dhamma. So Venerable Anuruddha thought, this Dhamma can be understood by one who gains concentration, not one who does not gain concentration. Then number seven, Venerable Anuruddha had was, this Dhamma is for the wise, not for the unwise. Panyavantasayan Dhammo, Nayan Dhammo, Duppanyasa. This Dhamma is for the wise, not for the unwise. That is why when we describe the Dhamma, it says, Pachattang Veditabbo Vinyuhi. I think you recite this passage in Pali. Pachattang Veditabbo Vinyuhi. The Dhamma is to be realized individually by wise individuals, not unwise individuals. Unwise person does not understand Dhamma. Among these 6 billion people in the world, there are only a very handful of people who are wise. And they are the ones who understand Dhamma. Not all the 6 billion people. So we don't go by numbers. Buddhism can be understood by intellectual, wise individuals. So Venerable Anuruddha's thinking was very clear, very true, perfect. Only the wise person can understand the Dhamma. With this seventh thought, when he was sitting, then Buddha, sitting in Pubbarama, in his own monastery, read Venerable Aniruddha's thoughts with his own supernatural mind. And he thought, this is a wonderful opportunity for me to go and talk to Aniruddha. And Buddha immediately disappeared from the place where he was and reappeared in front of Venerable Aniruddha. This is one of the Buddha's miracles. Buddha normally did not perform miracles for anything cheap, just to show off, just to impress people, just to make people believe in order to convert people to his teaching. He performed miracles very rarely, on very special occasions, only to teach Dhamma. Therefore, it is called Desana Patihariya. The best miracle the Buddha has recommended us to perform is to teach Dhamma and convert the vicious, wicked criminal into saintly, wholesome, noble person. That is the miracle. So at that time, when the Buddha read Venerable Aniruddha's thoughts, not Venerable Aniruddha was wicked or vicious, but Buddha wanted to teach Aniruddha the complete set of noble person's thoughts. 8 thoughts of a noble person. Venerable Aniruddha had only 7 of these thoughts. So Buddha appeared before him and he gave him another noble thought of a noble person to make it a list of 8. What did the Buddha teach? Buddha said, Aniruddha, these 8 thoughts that you have in your mind are wonderful, very good. But I like you to learn one more. That is, this Dhamma is not for one who is infatuated with worldly pleasures, but for one who is not infatuated with worldly pleasures. Now the word used here is papancha. I think those who have studied Pali, read Buddhist literature, might have come across this word, papancha. This is a very big word, loaded with heavy, deep meanings, papancha. This is called conceptual proliferations. When the mind is full of conceptual proliferation, we cannot understand Dhamma. The mind should be free from the conceptual proliferation. That is why I said the practice of mindfulness should be done without concepts, labels, ideas, words. So, having mentioned these 8 thoughts of a noble person, what I am trying to drive at is the topic that you have suggested me to talk about. That is, how can we be full of joy, happiness, through the practice of Dhamma? I have not forgotten the topic, but I want to first give you the background and then come to the conclusion. So Buddha said, when somebody has these 8 kinds of thoughts, that individual can practice meditation. Gain jhanas, 1st, 2nd, 3rd, and 4th. 1st jhana is the jhana. Jhana means deeply concentrated state of mind, free from five hindrances. The second jhana is the state of concentration without thoughts. Without thoughts. That is the state where you will really have a noble silence. People, when they go to retreat, they hear always, observe noble silence. You cannot observe noble silence without attaining the second level of jhanas. Because only in the second jhanic level, your thought stops. This is called vitakka vicharanam vupasama ajjattam sampasadanam chetaso ekodibhavam avitakkam avicharam vivekajam pitisukham dutiyajjhanam upasampajya viharati. Meaning, having overcome thoughts, one enters and dwells in the second jhana, which is free from initial application of thought, sustained application of thought, and filled with joy, happiness and concentration, born from concentration. Joy and happiness born from concentration. That concentration arises when the thought stops. That is the time you will have a joy and happiness. Even in the first jhana, you have joy and happiness. That joy and happiness is very superficial. What is that joy and happiness? It is being away from societies. You are with people, with family, with children, with parents and brothers and friends, parties, this and that. You are very tired of that. Then you realize, gee, how nice if I have a quiet time, peaceful time. Then you go away. And that going away from active, busy life makes you relatively happy, makes you relatively calm, quiet. What did you do to gain this calm, this relative peace? You practice Dhamma. You practice Dhamma. What is the Dhamma you practice? You let go of your clinging, craving, attachment to the society, to activities, to noises, to babbling, to gossip, to slander. You said goodbye to them, temporarily, moved away. That is the practice of Dhamma. You practice it, as a result, you are very happy and peaceful. But that happiness, that joy, that peace is a very ephemeral, temporary, superficial. Then comes the second type of happiness, by letting go of thoughts, thinking. What kind of thoughts you give up? These are noble thoughts. The thoughts of loving friendliness, thought of compassion, thought of appreciation, these are the thoughts. These are called, in the Noble Eightfold Path, they are called right thought. Right thought means thought of nekkhamma sankappa, avyapada sankappa, avihimsa sankappa. Avyapada sankappa means thought of friendliness, metta. Avihimsa sankappa means thought of non-cruelty, compassion. Nekkhamma sankappa means the thought of letting go of your greed. These are noble thoughts. But when you attain the second jhana, you don't even think about them, because your Metta is very natural. Mind is simply filled with metta, without words, without beings, without concepts and ideas. Mind is totally filled with joy of metta. What did you do to get that joy? You practiced Dhamma. What Dhamma you practice? You let go of this wholesome Dhamma. Metta is a wholesome Dhamma. Thought of compassion is wholesome Dhamma. Thought of generosity, letting go of things is wholesome Dhamma. So you don't have attachment even to this wholesome Dhamma. You let go of even this wholesome Dhamma. And that as a result, you begin to experience a tremendous degree of joy and happiness. And then, still joy and happiness there is rough, coarse, not very deep and subtle. Then you give up. Piti means pleasure, thought of pleasure, experience of pleasure. That is the third jhana. You give that up and attain the third jhana, then you will have equanimity and happiness you experience physically. This is called sukhancha kayena patsangvedeti yantang arya achikanti upekkako satima sukavihariti tatyajjhanam upasampadya viharati. You give up the joy that arises from the second jhana and get very deep, subtle, profound happiness. What did you do to gain that happiness? You practice Dhamma. And even that is not very subtle and deep. Then you give up even that and attain the fourth jhana. That is the state where eight wonderful noble qualities are settled in the mind. What are the noble eight noble qualities? What are they? That particular state of mind is pure, parisuddha, pure, pariyodata, white, anangana, without stain, vigatupakkilesa, without idiosyncrasies, mudubhuta, soft, khammaniya, pliable, thita, steady, ananjapatta, imperturbable. These are the wonderful, noble qualities. And your peace at that time, immeasurable. The peace you experience in the attainment of the fourth jhana is immeasurable. What did you do to gain that peace? You practice Dhamma. So when you practice Dhamma, you gain this. So Buddha said to Venerable Anuruddha, those who maintain these eight noble persons, eight kinds of thoughts of a noble person, that individual can attain the first jhana, second jhana, third jhana, fourth jhana, and enjoy utmost peace and happiness. And attain these jhanas without difficulty, akichalabhi, akasiralabhi, nikamalabhi, without effort, without stress, without difficulty, automatically, easily person attains these stages. Not only that, Buddha said, when you practice the thought of liking little, wanting little, He said to the bhikkhus, when you have the thought of having little, you get robes. A monk gets robes. These robes will be made of rags collected from cemeteries, dirty pieces of cloth. He would collect and make a robe. And that doesn't look very attractive, doesn't look very expensive, doesn't look very comfortable, doesn't look very neat and beautiful. But since this particular monk practices the thought of wanting little, he enjoys this robe just like a richest person having most expensive suit taken from his wardrobe, his closet, the most expensive cloth he took, and he wears it and become very proud, very happy, thinking that I'm somebody, I have money, I got this most expensive suit. He will be happy. Buddha said, one who practices the thought of having little, wearing this robe made of rags, will exactly be like this rich man. Rich man experiences pleasure by wearing expensive cloth. The one who enjoys wanting little enjoys very simple cloth. Wearing it, he thinks, I have a very expensive cloth, very valuable cloth. No matter where he goes, he will become comfortable. He doesn't look for anything expensive. He is comfortable. Very tiny little thing he has. Not only that, he even does not talk about his practice of wanting little. Practice of wanting little is something that you make yourself noble, holy. People respect such a person. But he does not reveal it to others. Because this thought is within himself. He is totally happy, peaceful within himself, thinking, I can live anywhere with very little. That's the joy, happiness he gains by practicing Dhamma. Similarly, when he goes on alms round, he gets very poor food, not even salt, not tasty, not spicy, just very bland food he gets. Then he comes and eats just like a rich person going to a selected most expensive restaurant, spending thousands of dollars. He buys food very greasy, salty, oily, fat food. He eats thinking that this is delicious food. This monk, who wants very little and happy with little, goes out, gets this food, bland, no salt, no spices, no taste, but he enjoys that food. He does not demand expensive, delicious food. He is happy. What did he do? He practiced Dhamma. Similarly, he gets shelter, place to sit, place to sleep, place to protect himself from sun, rain, cold, wind. It is very shabby. Cave, a tree under tree, a cemetery. Very simple place he gets. And he enjoys it, thinking, the whole area is open to me. I don't have to worry about arranging furniture. No furniture. He can roll on the floor. Lot of space is there. He thinks, this is wonderful. I don't have to wash my bed sheets. I don't have to go spend money to the laundry, buying detergent, making shampoo. This is plenty. I can lie down. I can rest. I can sleep. I can roll. open, no expensive, very simple. He enjoys it exactly like a very rich multimillionaire enjoys twin bed, queen-size bed, king-size bed, bed with two mattresses, six mattresses, water mattresses, and so forth, because he has so much money, he spent money looking for expensive things, and still he may not have good sleep. But this monk who wants little, just to spend his time quietly, he enjoys even more than the most, the richest multimillionaire. Similarly, when he gets his fermented urine as medicine, this sounds very, very repulsive, unpalatable medicine. This is the kind of medicine Buddha recommended for bhikkhus. Puti mutta besajjan nissaya pabbajja. When we receive ordination, we are supposed to say, I become a monk to drink fermented urine as my medicine. People eat cockroaches as medicine, don't they? People eat cockroaches as medicine. People eat snakes as medicine. Why not drinking fermented urine? So Buddha said, this fermented urine collected from a cow and mixed with herbal medicine and keep it overnight, and you drink it for certain diseases and you get cured. I know some people drink their own urine for people suffering from hepatitis. I've seen people drinking their own urine to cure hepatitis. And if you keep drinking urine whole day, towards the end of the day, urine looks very clear, pure water, no color, because everything, mineral, iron, protein, vitamin, keep reabsorbing into your body. Anyway, a monk who becomes a monk with this thought of wanting little can drink fermented urine as medicine, just like multimillionaire going to a hospital, expensive hospital, VIP wards with 20 nurses, all kind of modern medicine, IVs here, one tube in the nose, one tube in the urinary tract, another tube somewhere, and massages and morphine and this and that, whole day oxygen, this and that is given to him, and still he is suffering. But this monk wants very little to get cured and is very happy. He gets cured. So Buddha said, but he never tells anybody that he is practicing this Dhamma. All inside in his mind, he keeps to himself. I practice this. I don't burden anybody. Somebody who is not happy with this and all other seven other noble thoughts also like that, but I emphasized only one. And somebody who practices contentment, using whatever one has, also will be exactly like that, always happy. And that person will not go out and ask people to give him this, give him that. Asking people to give this and that is a burden to people, and people would not like to associate with such a monk or nun. And I want to conclude tonight's talk with a little story. There was a whole group of monks who went to forest to meditate. But when they were meditating, a whole bunch of birds, large school or herd of birds, came and made noise. Chip, 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 they made noise. And these monks could not meditate. They tried and tried, and for weeks they tried, they could not meditate. How can you meditate when the birds are chipping all the time? So they all went to the Buddha and complained and said, Venerable Sir, we cannot meditate there. Buddha said, I give you a mantra. What is the mantra? You go 3 times a day, morning, noon and evening. Simply ask these birds, Birds, please give me a little feather. You go and tell in the morning. Afternoon, you all go and tell birds, Please give me a feather. Evening, go and tell birds, Please give me a feather. You keep asking these birds one single feather 3 times a day. These monks went and started asking these birds to give them a feather. In 1 week, all the birds disappeared. Because these monks kept on bothering them, asking them something. And even the birds didn't like that. They flew away. So the Buddha said, if you are content with whatever you have, you will not bother people. And people will not run away from you. People come close to you. So, there's a very beautiful statement in Udana. I mentioned these are like a diamond, very pithy statements. There Buddha said, Ko atto udapanena apache sabbata siyong tanhaya mulato chetva kissa pariyesanam chare. If water is available anytime, what is the use of a well? What is the use of a well if water is available anywhere, anytime? Similarly, tanhaya mulato chetva kissa pariyesanam chare. When the craving is completely eliminated, why should we search for anything? When the craving is completely eliminated, what should we search for? There's nothing to search. We search and research again and again so long as we have a desire. When there is no desire, there is no search. So, that is the ultimate joy, pleasure, happiness we gain by practicing Dhamma. So friends, Dhamma practice is a wonderful thing that makes us always peaceful and happy. Why? Dhamma is always there to protect us, to guard us, secure us. When we do not practice, we always have fear. I give you some very simple, mundane, ordinary example. Suppose you hurt someone directly or indirectly, deliberately or unintentionally. You hurt somebody. And the person whom you hurt will be very upset, disappointed, angry, and conceive grudge. That person always is looking for an opportunity to hurt you doubly hard, to make you more painful. Do you feel secure? No. Any given moment, any opportunity, this person will do something to hurt you. So you are not secure. That means you are not practicing Dhamma. Suppose you do not hurt anybody. In your thoughts, words, deeds, intentionally or unintentionally, deliberately or not deliberately, you do not hurt anybody. You remain really honest. Honestly, you live your life without hurting anybody. Is there any reason for you to be afraid of anybody? Because you have no enemy. You feel secure, safe. So Buddha said, one who protects others get protection from them. One who protects oneself protects others. You protect your own mind from greed, hatred, and delusion. Thereby you protect others from greed, hatred, and delusion, and you will have no reason to have fear. So you move around, go wherever you go with confidence, with inner contentment, peace, and happiness. So friends, this is, I think, enough as a little Dhamma talk tonight. And as I promised at the beginning, if you have question, please ask me a question. I can spend another 10 minutes answering questions.
Brothers and sisters, this is the opportunity for you now to ask any questions, to clear any doubts that you might have in your mind.
Bhante said earlier, before the start of the talk, that we should invite devas to participate in the learning of the Dharma, so that devas could help us practice the Dharma. Uh-huh. Why is that so?
Uh-huh.
Thank you.
You heard the question. She asked, I invited devas to come and listen to Dharma, and how the devas coming and protecting us to practice Dhamma, right? According to the Buddha's teaching in Ratana Sutta, you know Ratana Sutta? In the Ratana Sutta, Buddha asked devas to protect human beings who practice Dhamma. So what they would do, they can make us feel comfortable creating suitable environment for us to practice Dhamma. That means removing obstacles from our way to practice Dhamma. Among devas, there are wholesome devas, we have sammaditti devas. Sammaditti devas can make things easy for us. For example, we have metta practice. When we practice metta, metta practitioners themselves are said to be protected by devas. Devata rakkhanti, one of the 11 benefits of practicing metta, is devata rakkhanti, divine beings protects people who practice metta. When we are protected by the devas because of our own metta practice, then our life becomes very smooth, and our metta practice becomes smooth, and then our mind becomes calm, relaxed, and peaceful. So all are related. First we practice metta, and then deities protect us, giving us additional encouragements, additional support to practice more metta. That is how deities help us to practice Dhamma. Okay, in our daily life, her question is, in our daily life, we come across people who hurt us. And that makes our life very difficult. And how can we deal with such persons? Even we can protect ourselves. Right. You know, this is very good example of practicing Dhamma. We must understand, a lot of things we have to understand in order to deal with kind of situation. One is that this samsara is repetition of birth and death. There have been individuals who have been either our brothers, sisters, mothers, fathers, friends, even enemies. That is the nature of samsara. In samsara, we have come across all kind of, not only this life, many, many lives before, you yourself must have done something to somebody, and now you don't know what you have done. And now you come across somebody without hurting that person, you get hurt from that person. You don't know. That is one thing we got to remember when we encounter people like this. Second thing we must remember that these individuals exist for us to practice Dhamma, because they always give us an opportunity to practice metta, practice patience, practice understanding. Without them, our life is boring. And they give us, they create us, create opportunities for us to practice metta, practice compassion, practice patience, practice mindfulness, practice concentration. If they are not there, we simply go about doing our things without having a chance to practice these things. That is the second way of looking at situation like this. If in every person's life, there must have been someone who has done something to hurt the person. If that person think, this is a friend of mine, this is a person who reminds me to practice Dhamma. And also, thirdly, we must think, even the Buddha, who was so perfect, embodiment of wisdom and compassion, had enemies. Devadatta, Chincha, Magandhya, and so forth. Here, Sunakkatta, they were living with Buddha, never learned Dhamma. Buddha was teaching Dhamma to everybody. He was Purusha Dhamma Sarathi, he was a trainer of the trainable. And still these people were his enemies. Buddha was never being affected. Why? He was like us in samsara. He practiced all these patience, 10 perfections, and learned how to deal with these things. When we this is another way of thinking it, because even the Buddha had some enemies. So how much more enemies we may have? We are not even million miles close to the Buddhahood. And therefore, when we have someone who does something to hurt us, we should not get upset, disappointed, emotional. We must think, this is the nature of life. So these are the three ways of dealing with it. One is thinking of samsara. Second is thinking of your own doing something to somebody in the previous life without knowing. Third is thinking of the Buddha. And the fourth actually is thinking that this is my friend who reminds me to practice Dhamma. You know, you have heard this very famous meditation teacher, what's his name? I just forgot his name. Perhaps if you remember when I tell the story, you can tell me the story. There was a man in his meditation center. He was an almost rotten person. His words are very hurting. He does not do any work. He was always creating trouble. He gets in everybody's way, a lot of problems. So everybody hated him. And finally, everybody hated him, and therefore he could not stay there. Finally, he left. Then everybody was very happy. Then the meditation teacher found out why they all were happy. They said, so-and-so left. Did he leave? Where did he go? They said, we don't know. So he went, sent a search party to find him and said, you come and stay here, I pay you. I pay you to come and stay here. Now everybody hated him, but the teacher wanted him to be there on a salary. Why? Because he thought he actually was there to teach everybody how to practice mindfulness, how to practice patience, how to practice compassion, metta. Now if when he is gone, there was nobody to remind them to practice metta. So you remember the name of the guru? You may not remember. Never mind. You will come across the name later on. So even if there were no such a person, I think the story gives us a message. So I would not worry about if you ask everybody's life had person like that to hurt them. So we have to take it in a very positive way, wholesome way.
Sadhu, sadhu, sadhu.